Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Kuhn.
Thank you, Shania, and welcome everyone to the Webster Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Top 10 Java-related Issues in Webster Application Server. The presenters are Ajay Balodia, Pavan Haridas, and Tom Iverton. AJ, Pavan, and Tom are from Level 2 Customer Support. AJ has been working in WebSphere and Java support for 15 years. Prior to that, he was a developer using C++, Smalltalk, and Java programming languages. Pavan has more than 14 years of WebSphere application server customer support and testing experience in multiple versions from version 3.5 to version 8.5. Areas of specialization include administrative console, install, web container, dynamic cache, SDK issues, out of memory, crash and performances, session management, ORB, and WLM. Tom has been working for WebSphere Java support for the last 10 years. Previous to that, he was a C++, and Java developer. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Tom.
Thanks, Kathy. So today we're going to give a brief overview of some of the more common Java issues that we see in WebSphere support. Can you move on to slide 2, please? So some of these issues have simple resolutions, and some do not. There may be further WST presentations for deep dives into some of the topics we talk about today, especially those ones that don't have simple resolutions. So here's a list of the topics we're going to cover today. Can you move to slide 3, please? Java heap size. The Java heap is the area of memory used for storing Java objects. So if there's a Java object created, it's going to be on the Java heap. All other memory allocated by the JVM is referred to as native memory. This is usually allocated by native code, either by the JVM internal C, C++ code, or WebSphere native code. Or it could be, native code that's included in the applications. But native memory is fairly complicated, so we're going to pretty much not talk about that today. That's what all we're going to say. We're mainly doing Java heap size now. And the default for WebSphere is 256 megabytes. It's quite small, and it's usually not sufficient. In 32-bit, we only need 4 bytes to store each address. But in 64-bit, we now need 8 bytes to store each address. Since Java objects are a lot of pointers, we need a lot of addresses, so heap use is much higher on 64-bit. There is compressed references, which help a bit, but they have other issues. Can we move to slide 4, please? So a common issue with the default heap size is getting out-of-memory errors. One of the problems we have with trying to debug these with a small heap, we don't get much to see it in a heap dump. Because in a small heap, there's going to be a small amount of leaking objects. If we have a larger heap, there's going to be a lot more of those leaking objects. And that's important, because when we're looking at a heap dump, trying to find out what's using all the memory, it's really nice if we know it's using a lot of memory. If you've got a heap of, say, a gigabyte, and your memory footprint's around 800 meg, normal use. If you get an out of memory, we're going to be trying to find something that's using around 150 megabytes in amongst that 800 megabytes of valid memory use. The big memory users are probably going to be session data and cache data. It's going to be very hard to find out what's using that 150 meg. If we go to a way larger heap than the normal footprint, say 4 gigabytes, we're probably going to see 2 gigabytes of these leaking objects in a heap dump. That makes it a lot easier to find the leaking object across what's valid memory use. So whenever we see these heap out of memories, If the heap's not already really large, the first step is to increase the heap size so we can get a better idea of what's actually leaking from a heap dump. There's also the chance that the application just needed more memory than was configured, but the main reason to increase it is so we'll have more leaking objects in the heap dump. Can we move to slide 5, please? So a CPU starvation message means the JVM didn't get adequate CPU cycles from the operating system. This can be caused by poor garbage collection. As garbage collection has stopped the world, if there is a long garbage collection cycle, there will be a gap where there's no application processing. This can then cause the CPU starvation message. It could also be caused by a different process on the same machine taking all the CPU cycles, like some rogue process which has just grabbed everything, or you might have a scheduled batch job which, you know, is expected to take a lot of CPU. Another reason can be an overcommitted virtual environment, like in VMware. This VMware overcommitment is becoming more common. Can we move to slide 6, please? So if the delay time is less than 10 seconds, then we could ignore the message. It's not going to hurt us any. If it's longer, especially over 30 seconds, then we really want to pay attention. So to determine if garbage collection caused the issue, we want to map the timestamps of the message from the system out and to see what's going on at that time in the verbose GC. So once we look at that time in the verbose GC trace, we want to see what happened. Did we have a bad garbage collection cycle? Did a heap dump get generated? A Java core? Maybe a series of Java cores. Heap dumps are also stopped the world, as you can't write part of the heap out while there's still stuff executing on those objects. So if a heap dump's getting written out, it's going to take some time because they're usually quite large. And if you have a slow disk, it's going to take even longer. And for that whole period of time, nothing can execute on the JVM. So if garbage collection or a heap dump was not the cause, then you need to check for other processes on the machine. So you'd want your operating system admin to check for that, see what can be running on there taking all the cycles. If you're on a virtual environment, then you're going to need your VMware admin to look in to see what's causing the problem. Could be some resource is overcommitted, CPU memory or something. So they'll have to look into what they're doing at that level. Can we move to slide 7, please?
Slide 7, JVM shared classes. Starting Java 5.0, IBM JVM introduced a feature to share classes between Java processes. This feature may improve performance. Classes only need to be loaded once from the disk. At startup of the JVM, a cache is maintained that contains the classes that each JVM looks at. If the class is not in the cache, it will be placed in the cache, which is then accessible by other JVMs. Accessing classes from the cache is faster than the disk. It is important to note that separate caches are maintained for different versions of the JVMs, and also different for 32 and 64-bit JVMs. Sharing classes from cache can also cause problems. If anything goes wrong in the cache, then all JVMs accessing that cache can have problems. Most common issues encountered are crash of the JVM, where the process will dump a core file and exit. This can occur when the cache gets corrupted and pointers point to incorrect locations in the memory. You may also see class loading errors like class cast errors and an unexpected result. Slide number 8. There are several potential problems that you can encounter with JVM shared class usage. After an upgrade, it is possible that some of the classes in the cache are the older versions. JVMs are designed to automatically rebuild the cache, but there can still be problems with this. Shared cache becomes corrupted. This can happen if multiple JVMs write to the same area of the cache. In both the cases, the server will fail to start, or it may crash after it starts. This could also be class loader errors, which are difficult to diagnose. To resolve such issues, you need to either disable the shared class cache or clear it. To disable the shared class cache, you can add a generic JVM argument to your application server, and that can be done either through the admin console or wsadmin commands. The second way to resolve the issue is by clearing the cache. You can run clear class cache command, which is part of the WebSphere installed bin folder. The only catch with this command is that all the JVMs on the box must be stopped before running this command. Slide number 9, Hunt Thread Detector. WebSphere has a Hunt Thread Detector mechanism, which was introduced in version 6.1, which has a timer that starts every time a request is started. If the timer goes over a threshold, the default being 10 minutes, a message will be returned to the system out log file. Hunt thread detection is enabled by default in the WebSphere application server environment. It is useful for detecting hunt transactions or threads that can run into infinite code paths. The hunt thread message may not always be an issue. For example, if you have a request that is supposed to take longer than 10 minutes, in such cases, the hunt thread detection message may not be a valid hunt thread. Slide number 10. The hunt thread detector will write out the call stack of the thread running the request to the system out log file. This is very useful since no other tracing or data collection is required to detect what went wrong. In many cases, the call stack is enough to figure out what is causing the request to take so long. If it is not sufficient, the WebSphere Hunt Thread Detector has an option to generate a Java core when it detects a potentially hung thread. The Java core can provide details of all the running threads in the JVM, which can be useful to determine monitor locks and other dependencies that are causing the hang. Slide number 11, Manage SDK command. Java 7.0 and 7.1 are supported as optional JVMs for version 8.5. Java 7.1 was introduced with WebSphere Application Server 8.5.5.2. Java 6.0.1, also called Java 6.2.6, is the default SDK that is installed when you install the product. Manage SDK command allows the level of Java that you'd like to use for your profile or an individual application server. You can change the JVM that WebSphere uses with Manage SDK command. It will provide a list of JVMs that have been installed, which you can choose from. This can be done, again, at the profile level or the server level. Slide number 12, common questions. I have a 32-bit WebSphere installed. Can I use 64-bit Java 7.0? The bit level of Java 7.0 or the SDK that you need to use needs to be the same as the WebSphere install. So you cannot use a 64-bit Java 7 that had a WebSphere 32-bit installed. Can I have different versions of JVM in my cell? Yes, you can. But there can be significant compatibility issues if your cell has different JVM versions. So it is a good practice to use Java 7.0 on all your WebSphere 8.5 profiles and servers. Slide number 13, crash without a footprint. This type of crash is difficult to debug as there was no data generated to give clues about what happened. Usually, a core is generated when the process exits abnormally, but in many cases, there is no footprint of what caused the problem. Sometimes, the node agent is the cause. The node agent in WebSphere is designed to monitor the app server processes, and thus, if it detects an unresponsive server, it may restart it, and there may be no footprint on when this was done in the app server logs. It is also possible that JNI code has called the JVM to shut down, JNI being the Java Native Interface code. On Linux systems, OOM killer is a system process that can terminate a process without footprint. The only way to determine if OOM killer on Linux was the culprit for the app server crash is by examining the messages file, which is usually found under the var/log folder. The application server can also exit abnormally when a code inside the application uses system.exit. There is a WebSphere Java property that we can set which will generate data in certain cases. This property is useful in determining what code could have executed system.exit. Slide number 14, common performance issues, garbage collection. Since garbage collection is a stop-the-world process, no application code can execute while the GC is running. If GC is poor, application's performance is going to be poor. This is because the GC is stop-the-world, and no application code can execute while GC is performing. Poor GC is often caused by a too small of a heap. Determining proper Java heap size for a production system is not a straightforward task. Lot of GC issues arises due to inadequate Java heap capacity and tuning. It is important to spend time to determine the footprint requirement of the Java heap, so that the GC runs effectively. You cannot and should not attempt to guess this important phase during your system tests. The GC performance is specific and dependent on the GC policy that you have chosen, and thus it is important to make sure this has been factored when running your tests. Each GC policy has its own criteria and will behave differently under load and the data that it utilizes by the application. In brief, the GC performance is dependent on the application workload and the data it manipulates and the GC policy that has been chosen. Sometimes the bad GC is caused by not enough physical memory on the box. This can cause memory paging, which will help the GC recalculate its addresses, and thus it's a very time-consuming operation for the GC.
Can we move to slide 15, please? The database queries. So if a database query takes a long time, then the request that runs it is going to take a long time. It's pretty straightforward, but it's true. The other thing that will happen is it will also tie up a thread in the thread pool for a longer period of time. This can cause a bottleneck. Let's say you've got a request that normally takes 1 second to run, and you get a new request every second. So if you have a thread pool size 2, it's going to be fine. The threads will always be running one request or empty. But let's say the database query in that now takes 3 seconds instead of 200 milliseconds, and the request takes 4 seconds. Now, when the first request comes in, it's going to run on your first thread. A second later, the next request is going to come running in, and it'll go on the second thread. Now, a second later, the third request is going to come in, but the first request hasn't finished in the first thread yet, so it's going to be waiting. And eventually, it will build up and up. And it's the same thing even if you have a thread pool of size 50. Eventually, it's going to fill up, and requests are going to build up waiting just to get a thread. If the connection pool is too small, threads may have to wait before they get a chance to even make the query. So this is the same deal as with the thread pool. If it's too small, or now it's too small because the queries are taking a lot longer, you've got a bottleneck. One way to avoid this part is to size your connection pool the same as the thread pool. So if you've got the same number of connections as threads, a thread should never have to wait to get a connection because there'll be enough for every thread. Move to slide 16, please. Daylight saving time. Many countries are now changing the start and end dates for daylight saving. The JVM must be updated to handle these changes. In the past, when daylight saving never changed, it was always the same dates, same Sunday that it changed. There was no problem. It was just programmed to do those one things. But now with different things every year, the JVM's got to be updated every year to handle it. There's a Java time zone update tool that will update the daylight saving time changes for the JVM. It doesn't update the whole JVM. It just updates the binary file that has when the daylight savings times are changed. So before every time change that comes up, you can either check the DST configuration of your JVM, or you can run the latest version of the JTZU tool. Since you're going to have to run a program anyway, it's probably best to just do the update tool. Move to slide 17, please. You may see the too many open files message in the system out. This means that they're trying to have too many file descriptors for what is allowed. It can be due to a file descriptor leak in the code or to an operating system restriction. It's almost always an OS limit. So default for most operating systems for the number of file descriptors are set up for a single user with their normal programs and applications. They're not set up for a server application. Server applications use a lot of file descriptors, especially sockets. Every connection is going to have a socket. Every database connection, every connection back to the web server, lots of sockets are being used. Also, every jar file that's been opened will have a file descriptor, and every log. So it can be a lot of file descriptors. If you're on Unix, check the ULimit for the maximum number of file descriptors. If it's less than 12K, then increase it. Sometimes you'll still get the too many open files, even with the large number of ULimits. We may then ask you to set it to even higher, 20,000, and then collect an LSOF trace, which will tell us all the file descriptors in use by that process. Almost always, it's going to be the ULimit was too low. If there were some issues on the older 1.6 JVMs that would leak file descriptors, so if you're on WebSphere 7 and your JVM is before SR11, you probably want to think about upgrading the JVM. So can we move to slide 18, please? So here are some tips to prevent some of these common issues. And the number one tip is keep the JVMs up to date by applying the recent service releases. It's amazing how many issues we see resolved by just applying the latest release. There are also security vulnerability fixes in a lot of the more recent JVM patches, and that's another reason to keep it current. You should monitor your system out file, error messages and warning messages. If you get some normally, then you'll know which ones to look for. If you're getting new ones, especially error messages, you want to look in to see why those are being caused. Don't wait till there's a big problem. And another tip is to monitor your heat use and garbage collection. User load can creep up and up, eventually causing a performance problem with the garbage collection. So if you keep track of your heap use and the GC performance, you can see the trend and get prepared. So maybe you need to add more RAM to the box so you can put a higher heap to handle this higher load. Maybe you need higher CPU numbers to handle the CPU use of the new load. But if you're checking it, you'll see it creeping up, and you won't just wait till all of a sudden it's a massive problem and you don't have time to do anything. We move to slide 19, please. So here's a page of some of the links for some of the things we talked about in the topics. If you want to get more information on them or some of the things we needed, like the time class to tell you what daylight savings time you're using, it'll be on this page.
Thank you, AJ, Pavan, and Tom, for a great presentation. And now it's time to move on to the question and answer session.
Our first question is coming from the line of Jason. Your line is open, sir.
Yes. I'd like to know, is the hung thread detector available in all versions of IBM Webster Application Server or just 7 and above?
The hung thread detection was put in place in version 6.1.19, I believe. That was when we started doing the hung thread detection policy. It's available in all the future versions after 6.1.19.
Okay, so if we're on 6.1.13, it would not be included.
Correct.
All right, so we could patch to the 19 and we'd be able to utilize it.
Yes, you can patch to 19, but a better suggestion would be to upgrade to the latest one. I believe we are at 6.1.37.
Yeah.
So it would be best to go to 6.1.37 or the latest one.
Would that reduce the... I mean, when you go that big, is that a... high risk that we might run into other problems?
The risk would be actually of not hitting the known problems. So you can look at it the other way. There would be hundreds of bugs that got fixed in 6.1.37, so you'd be preventing those.
Okay, I'm just curious because our application runs in that Webster space, and their vendor only certified it to 13.
Right. You definitely want to run your regression test, whenever you make an upgrade, especially when you jump the six back levels.
Okay. I have another question. Right now, we're experiencing the node agent utilizing slowly increasing and utilizing the CPU to 100% over time in our version of 6.1. Is that normal, or is that a bug, or is that something that might be fixed by applying a fix pack?
It's possible. It could also be garbage collection taking all the cycles. Node agents, while they're starting to do more and more, don't really have a whole lot of stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
If your cell is really large, like 100 nodes, then there's a lot of overhead.
It's only one node.
Oh, okay, yeah. So there's not too much overhead there. So mainly all it's doing is moving stuff from the D manager and writing it down and then talking to the app servers. Usually it's got the default heap size. And as, ears and things being pushed get larger,
mm-hmm.
the memory use isn't is higher than it's configured.
So if we're pulling large amount of data across the network through that what's the server and whatnot, could that cause the node agent to garbage collection to eventually get too big?
Yeah, if you're doing like stuff from the D manager pushing the application down a lot,
mm-hmm.
That can raise it. There can also be defects in the JVM and WebSphere that would.
Yeah, because this started like 6 months ago.
Okay. and it, you know, it gets worse and worse. That's probably something.
Yeah, so I have to kill the service. I rerun it through Windows services, so I have to kill it every so often, and then it solves the problem, and then eventually it starts up again over time.
Right.
And I did see that there's like thread issues, like getting hung.
Okay. Yeah, so you want to look at like the call stacks for those and see what heap size you've got configured.
Okay.
For the node agent.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're default from what the vendor told us a long time ago.
Oh, okay, yeah. So it'll be 256 meg. So you probably want to up that to like 1,024 meg if you're 32-bit.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we only have four gigs of RAM on that server.
Oh, yeah. So, well, you know.
I know. We're.
If you're going to upgrade soon, you know, maybe just recycle the node agent weekly on some interval or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm currently doing. I was just curious if that was related to the garbage collection or something else.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to look at the data to be sure, but, you know, quite often when it's been working fine for like 4 years, and all of a sudden we're seeing something and we really haven't changed much, it's, you know, larger applications being pushed or stuff like that.
Okay, that's all.
We do have some questions that are in the group chat. The first one is from Savan. How do you generate heat dump on the Solaris box?
Okay, Solaris has a bit different JVM than the other platforms, and the heap dumps are not enabled by default. So there's a generic JVM argument we have to add, and when we add that, then when you get it out of memory, it will generate a heap dump file.
If you want to generate a heap dump on demand, you can use JMAP command, and we have the syntax in one of our links for Solaris must gather. JMAP is a command that you can use to generate a heap dump on demand.
Okay, the next question is from Jeffrey. Are new JVM builds made using the latest DST tables?
They are, but the DST tables may get updated again, and like the latest SR of the JVM may be like 3 months old, and so if there were any changes between then and now, then you'd still have to run the update tool. But when the JVM is built, it uses the most latest DST table for that time.
The next question comes from Vlad. We are working right now on multiple new RHEL H 6.5 servers. I notice when I stop JVM from the command line, it goes down in a couple seconds. When I try to start that JVM right away, it always will have a problem with already listed ports. So basically, I need to wait 30 seconds to restart that JVM from the command line. However, when I do it from the DMGR console, it takes about 2 minutes to take JVM down, and I don't have any problems with restarting the JVM from the console. What is the difference how you start JVMs from the command line or DMGR?
When you issue the stop server command as a command line, it puts out a message that the server has stopped. However, it may have pending transactions that are still running in the background. So the actual reporting of the message that the server has stopped is not truly a stop of the server because there are some pending transactions. So when you go to immediately retry starting of the server from the command line, it will have some of the ports that are still in use, and it will not allow you to restart the server. The D manager, before it throws out or refreshes the console where it shows the server has stopped, is when all the transactions have actually been stopped. That's the difference I believe exists between the actual stop of the server that's displayed on the console versus the command line.
Question came from Daniel. Do you know some tool or formula to configure the heap size?
Yeah, unfortunately, there is no tool. The heap use is going to be dependent on what objects the application allocates, uses, the user load, how much cache is configured, all kinds of things. It's going to be kind of, you know, so fuzzy that you can't determine an exact amount. So what we normally do is we'll start off with an amount of heap, normally on 32-bit, around 1280 meg, 64-bit, around 4 gig, and then monitor the verbose GC. Now, with the verbose GC trace, we can see how much heap is being used after each garbage collection. And that's kind of like your base memory use. And you want to have memory on top of that so that you can be using that until the next garbage collection. And that's going to be dependent on how quickly the application allocates that much memory, because you don't want these, you know, full garbage collections too often. But, yeah, there's no way to actually just determine what heap size is going to be best. You've got to kind of start off and then tune one in. And it has to be with the same load you're going to expect in production. If the load's different, the heap use is going to be different. And then all your heap tuning is kind of wasted.
And we have another question here from Valette. Is there any sense to increase default heap size for node agent, or is the default 256 megabytes more than enough for any node agent?
Yeah, well, sometimes it's going to be enough, and other times it's not. If it's 64-bit, it's probably not going to be enough. If you have a lot of nodes, it's probably not going to be large enough. And if your application files, your years and wars are large, it's probably not going to be enough. You'll be able to tell if you're getting out of memories and they're heap out of memories, then you know right away it's too small. If it's just getting poor performance, then we need to look at the verbose garbage collection trace to see how often the garbage collection is running. But usually it's not going to be large enough. But sometimes it's sufficient. So if you're not seeing any issues, you can just leave it alone.
Do you have some free tools to analyze hung threads and heap dump files?
We don't really have any tools to analyze like the thread dumps or Java cores. We just use like a programming text editor. We do have tools for heap dumps, though. They're large binary files, so you can't just look at them. Java cores are text files, so any good programming editor is handy to use those. The one we like to use is called Heap Analyzer, and you can download that from IBM DeveloperWorks. If you just go to Google and search like IBM and then Heap Analyzer, all one word, you'll get a hit on it.
Is that the ISA top determination tool?
No. It's a standalone tool, so, Java program.
Okay.
Also on the ISA workbench, there are tools that you can use for analyzing different Java programs.
We have an update from John that says that the ISA tool would help him as well in that area. So I just...
Correct.
Okay. Okay. The next question. Is there any way to troubleshoot too many open files apart from changing the U limit?
It depends on the platform. Usually increasing the U limit is going to be the fix. If 12K is not enough, then we'll use the Unix LSOF command, which will tell us all the file descriptors in use at that time. And then we'll track down what files are in use. Sometimes it's a pile of sockets. Then we'll have to look and see what networks are being used. Other times we'll see the same, you know, image file or something, and we'll know to look, you know, where they're doing static content from inside the application. But the LSOF command is what you use to debug after you increase the limit.
And then we have from Roshami, where do you find verbose GC trace in WAS?
On the IBM platforms like Windows, AIX, and Linux, it'll be in the native standard error log file, in the log files for the app server, and on Solaris, it'll be in the native standard out.log file. There's a checkbox in the admin console to enable it, so you may not have it enabled yet. You'd have to enable it first.
The next question comes from Aaron. You mentioned that Java 7.0 should be used with 8.5.5. Can you elaborate on that as opposed to the default JVM?
Sure. So Java 7.0 was an additional Java version that we started supporting with version 8.5.5. And the reason for that is many applications are developed using different J2EE standards, and some of the applications that use Java 7 standards would better run on Java 7 environment. So if you have applications that wants to take advantage of the Java 7 features, then it would be best to use Java 7 as opposed to the default Java 7.
The next question comes from Namrata. Can we implement Java-first mechanisms to resolve the heap size issues?
It's not clear what you mean by garbage first. It would help us if you can provide some more explanation on that.
So, Namrata, if you put that in the group chat, we'll get back to that question. In the meantime, we'll go on to Vlad. Regarding my question about starting JVM from command line versus DMGR, how can I force the command line to work the same as DMGR, meaning that when I run jobserver.sh command, I want that command to wait until all transactions on JVM are completed, canceled, and JVM is completely stopped.
I think we'll need to get back to you on that one. There are certain options that you can place on the command line for stopping, but you really don't want to do that because that will kill the transactions that are pending. So there are some messages that get logged into the system out that may have further indication. And we may even need to enable trace to see exactly what may have been pending.
So, Vlad, slide one of the presentation is the email address for the speakers. So if you would like to follow up with them. The next question is from Vlad again. Does WebSphere use IBM's GRE on all operating platforms, or does it use Oracle's ones on any specific OS?
The WebSphere running on the distributed platforms Windows, Linux, and AIX uses the IBM GRE, and WebSphere running on Solaris and HP uses the Solaris Oracle JDK.
The next question comes from Sam. How do I attach a shell script to run when I start a JVM, example, to clear trans logs or truncate logs?
I think we'll need to get back to you on that question. If you can send us an email on that, I'm not very clear, whether you want to use JMX WS admin command to kill the transactions that are pending or not. So please, let's do that via email.
Since we are using shared infrastructure and having 70 JVM instances sharing the same resource on Solaris Box, how do I best manage out of memory CPU starvation errors?
Well, you'll want to see all your use first. If you're getting CPU starvation messages, you'll want to see, is that due to garbage collection of that process or a bunch of the other processes running on the box? It could be that you've way overcommitted the RAM on the actual physical box underneath, and so you're going to get bad performance throughout. But when you got 70 JVMs running on one actual box, if you're on zones or something, you're going to have to make sure you've actually got enough hardware underneath to handle all that. So first, check your CPU messages and out of memories for each of the JVMs, and then find your actual resources underneath to make sure you have enough.
We have one question from Jason again. Your line is open.
I'm trying to figure out in 6.1, are you able to automate start and stopping the application servers within the IBM WebSphere from a command line, from a batch script, instead of having to go in and stop it, online?
Oh, so you want to have a script and then have it kicked off by a cron job or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
We run on Windows.
Okay.
So we run, but we have a scheduling software that would execute a batch script command line. To do that, but every time I look in there, it looks like there's a anyways, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, you could write a bat file that would then use some wsadmin commands to do that.
Okay, where do I find the wsadmin commands?
And you can go to one of the info centers or something for your level and just type in wsadmin.
Okay.
wsadmin.
One moment for the next question. Our next question is coming from the line of, is it Tarish?
Yes.
Okay, your line is open.
Okay. This question, so it's about the server status.sh pip. So what we notice in our production servers, our production or integration servers for that matter, it's WAS 7. When we recycle the JVMs, be it from the admin console, ours is a base version, admin console or the command line, sometimes we see the PIDs for server status.sh lying around like a 3 or 4 of them, and we started noticing recently, and we don't know why those are, and in some occasions we went ahead and killed them, but you know, killing a process, we are not really too keen on doing that. So we'd like to know what could be causing those server status.sh pids open that way.
Well, when you go to stop a server, it doesn't actually just stop right away. What it does is it stops taking any new requests, but any requests that it is currently running, it keeps running. And so it actually doesn't stop until those requests have finished. So sometimes we'll see that there'll be some requests that just doesn't finish, right? Maybe it would finish in 15 minutes. Maybe it would never finish. And that's what will stop the server from coming down. So we'd probably want to see some Java cores while the server wasn't, you know, after the stop command, but before it went away, to see what's actually executing on the threads in there.
Thank you. And our next question is coming from the line of Mr. Partick. Your line is open.
Yeah. For stop server, there is a command like stop server.sh. What's the difference between stop server.sh and using kill minus 9? Like, I know kill minus 9 will abruptly kill the process, like, but we are using kill minus 9 for most of our servers. So what's the difference?
Yeah, actually, the kill minus 9 will just, you know, just yank the covers right off and stop the process. And like I was saying before, the stop server will stop the app server from taking any new requests, but continue to run any existing requests. So if you kill minus 9 it, any requests that are running, you just killed those users. It can also leave some of the file pointers in a bad state because you're not doing a proper file closes. So you can corrupt some of the log files, etc., by just killing it. Most of the time it's probably going to be okay, but you never know when you're going to corrupt a file by doing that.
Actually, because since stop server needs the username and password, we are not using that stop server command, so...
That's a bad idea. Yeah,
okay.
you should use the password and stop it gracefully.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
From Vlad, I was wondering, from view of total trouble tickets and issues, what is the most reliable OS platform for WebSphere?
Yeah, probably AIX, but, you know, they're all fairly good. They just have different quirks.
Also, is there any WebSphere version certified for RHEL GL 7.0 already?
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to look that up. Yeah, admin stuff.
Is there any advantage running IBM WebSphere on Linux versus Windows?
No.
Nothing new in the web conference, so at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you, and we appreciate your participation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Ajay, Pavan, and Tom, for presenting today. Have a great day.